Welcome to CoCurious, where we break free from conventional learning. My name is David McLean, and I host educational leaders to practically discuss measuring what matters, not just what's easy to count. We assess genuine learning beyond mere checkboxes, and we're interested in building sustainable futures instead of promoting endless growth cycles. CoCurious is powered by learningadvisory.com, and we're delighted you've joined us for this conversation. Last year, I hosted Dr. Mornay Mostert for what has become a very popular episode titled The Challenge of Aligning Behavioral and Financial Performance. During that conversation, Mornay and I spoke about rethinking finance and value and addressing behavior by understanding mindset. So today we're taking the conversation further, including discussion around Mornay's new book, Executive Futures, A Quest for Quantum Curriculum. Mornay, what is quantum curriculum and how does it differ from traditional curriculum?
So you're starting with the easy ones again, aren't you, David? It's always great to be with you. You know, I've been in this executive space now for almost 20 years, working with senior people around the world, trying to help them to think and to learn. And we've had the idea of curriculum since around the 1600s. And it really came from the Latin idea of running, from the Latin word currere, to run. And since that time, curriculum became defined as the idea of a course. In fact, that was the original meaning of the word, to run a course, originally a linear course, in university terms, a fixed linear course. And I thought there was a fascinating parallel between this kind of thinking and traditional analytical thinking from the first industrial revolution from the same period, and a third similarity between classical mechanics. And then, of course, in roughly the 1930s, we had this dramatic paradigm shift from classical mechanics to quantum mechanics and the study of quantum physics. And I thought it would be intriguing, because so many businesses are struggling with what is the curriculum for senior people in a near chaotic future, to see if there's anything to be learned from that shift from classical to quantum. And so I'm arguing that we're having the same shift in physics as we now have in learning. And so quantum evokes those quantum-like behaviors, and away from the idea of a classical standard-based sequenced linear planned experience, to something that has a few other characteristics. Perhaps firstly, the idea of quantum computing, for example, one of the first things that comes to mind is the notion of superposition. This is the very difficult thing. I must just hasten to add, David, that Feinstein famously said, if you think you understand quantum physics, then you probably don't. So perhaps first the idea of superposition, which is this notion that you have what we might call simultaneity. In other words, things are happening at the same time. And so the metaphor from quantum mechanics is the idea that something can simultaneously be a particle or a wave. It can simultaneously be in one position and another. And that seems to be a good metaphor for the world that many executives face, that things are happening simultaneously. And so often when we're developing senior people, we grow them as if things happen linearly. So, you know, you have an HR problem from 9 to 10, a finance problem from 10 to 11, an ops problem from 11 to 12, a strat problem from 12 to 1. We know in reality there's what you might call cognitive superposition. I have all of these problems coming at me at the same time. So I was fascinated by that. Is that something that we can help these guys with? Then, in addition to superposition and simultaneity, there's the old Heisenberg's uncertainty idea, which is very closely related to this. I must say, David, I was a little bit cautious to use quantum because it's kind of abused in the sort of hippie world. It's often used in very, very lightweight discussions about crystals and nonsense like that. The idea then of uncertainty, and I think we know from VUCA and Barney principles that that's inherent now. And if we're going to help executives to learn as if there is somehow certainty, when in reality there just simply isn't, then I think we're doing them a disservice. With that uncertainty comes elements of the distinction between a deterministic world, of which the classical curriculum was a symptom, and in which we could use mechanistic principles like on-off predictability and so on, from a deterministic world to a probabilistic world, in which we can make best guesses. And it doesn't mean it's all random, although it often feels like that, but it is certainly not deterministic. And then perhaps we could add, if we really want to go the whole hog on the quantum idea, notions of discontinuity that executives and their organizations experience something that just cannot be explained by a linear projection into the future. It's constantly discontinuous. Finally, I'll add the idea of entanglement, quantum entanglement, this idea of the distal effect, particularly of entanglement, versus the kind of proximal effect of Newtonian physics of, you know, the apple on my head and that's gravity and so on. This distal effect that something happens at a severe distance from me, and I'm nevertheless somehow entangled in that phenomenon. And so it was with these concepts borrowed from the quantum world that I thought, is it possible to conceive of learning and the notions of curriculum in a much more 21st century way?
What's coming through strongly is somebody who has proficiency in navigating that parallel universe is deemed to have strategic ambidexterity, meaning taking care of the sometimes repetitive, mundane, day-to-day plod. And based on the stuff we're doing now, relative to our current position and our desired position over time. And what I'm hearing in the quantum curriculum is that it's bringing an ambidextrous principle and nurturing of thinking and practice into whatever formalized learning is happening.
Yes. In fact, I'm interrupting you, but I'm loving your language of ambidexterity, meaning literally the right hand on both sides. In other words, skilled on both sides, the ambi from the Greek. And that's actually a bit of a quantum concept. I know I interrupted you, but I got excited.
Excitement is good. It's often a reflection of the dopamine of learning. How about that? Also, what's coming through to me, while superficially quantum versus linear curriculum, the quantum version suggests greater complexity, more to learn, for the clever relative to the not so clever, etc. But the more I reflect on this is that it's okay if I don't know yet. It becomes less tethered to a KPI mindset and more today into the future mindset of incremental grapple, incremental learning, incremental mastery in certain or many things.
That is such a great observation, that idea of grappling with ignorance. And so many philosophers have highlighted that. Mark Twain, who said, it ain't what you know that gets you into trouble. It's what you know for sure that just ain't so. You know, Nietzsche said a similar thing. He said, not to be absolutely certain is one of the essential things in rationality. So that idea of not knowing is, I would argue, under threat, because of course we think we know because we carry the world's knowledge in our pockets. There is just fascinating information coming out, just recent research by Microsoft and others, that proves what many of us in the slightly older generation have suspected, which is that an over-reliance on search engines can miniaturize critical thinking. And so just the idea of not knowing, and you and I know our clients don't like to hear that when we say it to them, I don't know. And neither do you, and nobody does, and anyone who claims to, as Feynman said in my introduction, probably doesn't. So that process then of investigation is much more important than the status of knowing. And the grappling with not knowing is a skill we need to reinvigorate. And I think I may have said previously on your show, I blame for this curse the tragedy that was emotional intelligence. Which I know many of my colleagues will be very uncomfortable saying. The reason I say that is that no matter how self-aware you are and how sensitive you are to the needs of others, that will not help you to navigate the cognitive complexities required. So I treat emotional intelligence as a hygiene factor. I'm assuming it's in place.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm laughing because it's a sure sign of having my echo chamber disrupted. It's one thing to hypothesize about something, and it's easy to be an armchair expert and navel gazer. So practically, what is required of us to transform ourselves and our organizations from a linear mindset, let's call that standardized curriculum mindset, and not just in academic, but corporate and every other environment of society, in a way that is practical and palatable. Something that is not palatable is probably not practical. We're talking about belief in a change.
Well, David, you should know better than to ask me anything practical. I've been accused of many things, but never of being a practical man. I say that, of course, in jest, because I work with real clients with real P&Ls and real balance sheets and real investors and real customers and suppliers and so on. So my approach in the book is the argument that, put very bluntly, I think the intellect can make a comeback. I don't think the biggest problem we have in the world is people are just thinking too well. They're just too smart. The decisions are well thought through. They've considered the ripple effects. They understand the interconnectedness. I don't think that's the problem we're suffering from. The intellect can make a comeback. It's not the worst thing in the world. The preface, by the way, of the book I've entitled Artificially Intelligent. And in fact, the first line in the book, if you don't mind me reading it, says most executives know more about how to use ChatGPT than they know about their own forms of intellectual process. If you gave most executives an exam and you say, on this page, write what you know about ChatGPT. On this page, write what you know about your own form of intellectual processing and the alternatives available to you. And I've done this with clients. They don't like it. Most people will answer the first one much more effectively. So that means that we could learn about thinking and decision-making and interrogation and investigation. It's possible. Now, I'm not claiming it's easy. In fact, the first chapter is called Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. So I recognize that that's the reality that these guys work with. And so the most practical I can get with this, if you can get practical with cognitive processing, is to say, well, how do you think about this? And I, tongue-in-cheek, say to people, if you want to make it in the academic world, then you've got to take a thing that you're interested in and divide it into three other things. If you can do that, people will think you've really thought about something. And, and the classical way of doing that is to take your thing and put it in the middle, David, of a triangle with the other three things around it. This seems to be the sign of deep thought. And I have taken my own advice here. And I've sat in many of these conference venues with the CEO getting up and saying, in this organization, what we need, ladies and gentlemen, is new thinking. And everyone utterly agreed. This is so true. It's visionary. This is why he's earning the big money and so on. And then, of course, you go back to your desk and you do the spreadsheet to the emails and so on. And the next quarter, you're back in there. This quarter, we grew by another 4.31%. And what we need in this organization is new thinking. He doesn't know what it means. Nobody else knows what it means. But we all agree. We're in consensus. So what I did is to say, what the hell does that mean? What is new thinking? And so my three legs of the triangle are the following. If you really want new thinking, you can change the content of your thinking, you can change the level of your thinking, and you can change the methodology of your thinking. And the book is mainly concerned with the methodology and the level. So I then talk about how could you go about doing this, and that has an awful lot to do with how you interrogate a problem. And so there are practical guides, coming back now to your question, practical guides then on if you want to think more systemically, if you want to think about multiverses and multiple realities and how things can be true and false depending on where you stand and who you are. Well, I've given you a series of steps to do it. If you want to interrogate the future beyond just a call and encouragement that the future is important, people, and it's coming at us and the robots are coming and all of that, how do you do it? I've given you a step-by-step-by-step guide. And if you do not get an insight as a result of that guide, you can have the book for free. People talk about paradigms, for example. I've taken the time to define 11 types of paradigms. And you can decide when you're making a big decision, which paradigm are you in and what are the risks and what are the opportunities? I've written that down on a piece of paper. Right, now, how do you shift it? I've given you steps to do it. Now, if you don't like my steps, create your own steps. And I'd love to read your work. You know that old idea in art that you create the art that you want to consume? I've sort of taken that to heart on this and thought, well, you know, I'd love to learn how to do this. I'm struggling to find, and I'm not saying no one's writing on it. There are many brilliant people on it. I've sort of said, well, how about this? Who is it? Ferlinghetti, who talks about this idea of constantly risking absurdity when you share your creative output. So there's some practical steps here. We want to think more systemically. Here's a process. Want to understand paradigms. Here's a process. Want to think futuristically. Here's a process. If you want to understand quantum a little bit better, here's the process. If you want to learn a little bit better, here's a model for learning. And I hope that what happens is that the response will be, Mostert, that's absolute rubbish. That's not how it works. This is how it works. Well, I would love to receive that text.
Well, do not read Executive Futures, A Quest for Quantum Curriculum at your own peril. The context of this type of thinking, doing, writing, and sharing is not about being the all-knowing, all-seeing, all-wisdomed genius. It's about constantly risking absurdity, putting something into the world and seeing what happens, not to it, but with it, as a prompt for all of us to be more mature, less fearful, and it's totally normal not to know about something yet.
I love that. And that's a great place to start. What if we don't know? There's a great concept in Buddhism called the beginner's mind. And it's just the idea that what if you came at it as if you didn't know? And with that comes so much curiosity to the title of your fantastic show. I was playing around with the idea of whether there's a relationship between directionality and thinking. Because I was curious about this physics idea and vectors and the thought process. And so I played around with these, what I've called the six wards of systems thinking. And I thought of a ward because the first image that came to mind was a psychiatric ward, which is the way I sort of think of many organizations. You know, the executive's brain kind of resembles windows in the sense that, you know, 16 windows are open, 3 are frozen, and no one knows where the music is coming from. And try to make a decision with in a mind like that. So with these wards, I thought then of a sort of psychiatric ward or a hospital ward. It seems all the wards are really people in need of a lot of help. And ward also indicates a place that also indicates direction. So you can think of inward, the inner ward, the world of emotional intelligence. You can think of outward, the wards you haven't visited yet, and what's not inside. Then you can think of backward, the direction thinking about the past, which has its merit, but it's certainly the one place we'll never visit again. Then, of course, you can think of forward. That's the stuff I'm really interested in. Where is it all going? But my personal favorite was awkward. The awkward investigation of something, making the thing awkward, and as a result of that, sparking creativity.
If this conversation resonated with you, check out the other episodes on CoCurious. Visit us online at learningadvisory.com and let's keep learning, let's keep sharing, and let's keep holding each other to account for the advancement of ourselves and practicing what we teach.